I got motivation for you, and here's the motivation. I would have nothing to say about President Trump because I wouldn't want to spend the rest of my life in jail, which, granted, would be about 90 minutes. Not well, yeah, yes. Well, that's an Epstein joke, but you Google all of that and get back to me. Thank you. All right. When you're explaining, you're behind the curve, but that's okay. Thank you, Dave. Matt Brown joins us now, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. Talk about President Trump. As a matter of fact, signing an executive order or an NIL in college sports, will it have an impact? Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Point newsletter, our friend. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, I'm doing great. Happy to talk about executive orders. Happy to talk about the president. Hopefully, you don't ask me any questions about Epstein.
I am absolutely not going to do that. It was just a little joke about, 90 minutes and in the rest of your life in jail being 90 minutes. Now,
Sure. You start asking those questions. I'm on the air. I'm on an FCC regulated channel. Next thing you know, my newsletter disappears.
Next thing you know, you're being audited.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm just kidding. I don't file. I don't pay taxes. Oh, have I got a mess waiting for me? Let's talk about what the executive order says. I don't know the best way. Matt, we're going to spend an hour with you because this is extremely complicated. It goes back to the House agreement. There's a lot of material to present. You're the expert. You tell me. But first, tell me about the Extra Point newsletter.
Sure. Extra Points is a publication. It's a newsletter that comes out 4 days a week that covers business, policy, and off-the-field stories that shape the college sports industry. Whether you're an SEC big-time program like LSU, somebody in the Southland or A-Sun, or down to the Division II, III, or NAIA levels. It's read by students, graduate students, and folks that work in the college sports industry all over the country.
So you can stay informed. How do you get it? You just go and subscribe, or is there a free issue?
That's right. You just go to extrapointsmb.com. There is a free edition and a premium edition, and it gets sent to your inbox about 4:30 Central Time every morning.
And you might want to subscribe because this is complicated stuff that you have to read and reread and reread, because let's talk about the executive order, and I guess we'll work back from that. When did President Trump issue the executive order, and what did it say?
Sure. So this would have been, the internet's kind of ruined my sense of time here at this point, but it was, I think, about 2 weeks ago. It's one of the challenging things about trying to cover the federal government is that the rules that we might have learned about how policy is made back in college or in high school and what's the purview of Congress versus the executive branch, that seems to have changed a little bit here. This administration is pretty aggressive about wanting to shape policy through the executive. What the EO is stating essentially is that the White House wants college sports to continue to preserve Olympic sport opportunities, to ensure that college athletes are not deemed as employees, and that NIL opportunities or outside competition opportunities are not, quote, pay for play, which is a lot of what the House settlement was attempting to kind of codify here. The challenge is that the NCAA and the CSC's ability to really enforce a lot of these rules run afoul of federal antitrust laws. And the White House can't unilaterally create an antitrust exemption. So the interesting question that folks in Washington and folks watching Washington are trying to figure out here is this EO more about trying to push lawmakers to do the thing that Trump wants? Or can Trump use the Department of Education or the DOJ or the federal grant apparatus to lean on schools in other ways to make them do what he wants?
First of all, as it relates to executive orders, the president is not doing anything that has not been ceded to him, whether you agree with it or not. I'm not talking about you, Matt. I'm talking about the listening audience. Congress has, in a lot of ways, abdicated their duties because they want to get reelected. They don't want to take on the tough stuff. So they've said, you know what? Okay, let the president do it, not just President Trump, but with executive orders. So along those lines, when I heard this, the first thing I thought of is, oh, Lord, here we go back to court. Who's the boss of who? And what happens this season? Because the House settlement's been in effect for about a month or so. Somebody texted in, Jordan asked me, have there been any winners beyond billable hours as it relates to the attorneys? And I think that might be a good question.
It is a good question. I think now is a pretty good time to be in business if you are an agent representing elite athletes. Even with some confusion about what parts of the House settlement are actually going to be enforced or not, because schools can and have been for the last, 6 weeks or so, directly paying athletes, in many cases, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. Now is a good time to be in the business where you're taking somewhere between 8% and 15% of that, as an agent commission, whether that's through the transfer portal, whether that's re-upping a contract with the school that you're already with. I think this has been positive for the college sports industrial complex. If you are in the business of selling compliance software or consulting services or salary cap data, the business is booming. But for everybody else, yeah, there's a lot of confusion, just like I think it would be if you were, locally here working in the oil and gas industry or in real estate development, and the rules change every 4 weeks. Makes it difficult to build the infrastructure you need to figure out how you actually run your business.
So what I'm trying to figure out here is if we put maybe one side and the other, didn't they used to have matching things in school, matching tests where you would go from one side to the other, you'd match one with C or two with X or whatever the correct answer was. Remember that? Didn't they have some guy, you drew lines or something like that?
I vaguely remember doing this as a teacher, yeah.
I think that was on the medical exam. I'm not quite sure. No, anyway. So let's put the House settlement on one line and on one side of the page and the Trump executive order on the other side and start drawing lines with what matches with what or what doesn't match with what, if we can do that.
Yeah, well, I'll try to do that. Okay. So the House settlement says that athlete compensation, if it's not coming from the school, needs to be tied to some level of fair market value. If it's not the school, so long as it doesn't go over the salary cap, can pay an athlete however much they want. And then if the athlete's going to get money from somebody else, whether that's Domino's Pizza.
Now we're talking about name, image, and likeness here, right?
Yep, you and I. Okay. If that money is supposed to be tied to fair market value.
Meaning you can't.
Meaning that,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you can't have, Tommy Tucker's hairstylist. I have no hair. The reason I said that. Paying somebody because I'm rich and I want depth on the offensive line, paying each backup offensive lineman for LSU $1 million a year to endorse my hair salon, right?
Yeah, that would be exactly right. What would happen is that what should happen based on the way the settlement is drawn out is that if you sign a backup LSU offensive lineman for your Miracle Hair Tonic, that goes into a big
even
database.
Better Miracle Hair Tonic.
Okay. Miracle Hair Tonic. Yeah, yeah, we'll pull
sure.
something out of the 1870s here, right?
Yeah.
Some snake oil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that gets run through a big database run by Deloitte to compare how much you're offering to pay versus a general pay range of what other people with similar social media followers and at similar programs performing similar services, what they might make. And if they say, whoa, 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 you're paying 70% more than everybody else is paying to do a brand deal, then you need to renegotiate this.
But
this
at the risk of hurting myself,
of
it sounds like you're talking about an index. And if that's the case, then it would seem as though everybody could drive it up to where the fair market value could indeed be $1 million a year for an backup offensive lineman if, for whatever reason, Tommy's Miracle Hair Tonic chose to spend his money that way. If the people, Bubba's Hair Tonic in Alabama chose to do that, or Texas Hair Tonic in Texas chose to do that, if it's an index, then everybody could drive it up, right?
You could. If you could find enough hair tonics throughout the country to work with 310-pound right guards, you could.
Or and supporters with deep enough pockets.
That may be what happens.
Supporters with deep enough pockets, right?
Exactly.
Because the product doesn't matter.
We're 6 weeks into the system. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, right. I think what's important to reiterate here, though, is like that's what the settlement says right now, right? Okay. Nobody meaningful that we're aware of has had their hair tonic deal blown up. And what the concern is that there's all sorts of agents and economists and attorneys that say, why the hell should I have to do this indexing and extra paperwork anyway? This is America. If I want to go pay somebody $1 million to promote my hair tonic, who are you to tell me I can't do that? This wasn't collectively bargained. And there's this risk that this entire settlement structure about enforcing who gets paid and what is would run afoul of antitrust laws, which then brings us to the Trump EO and what the SEC and other major programs are trying to do in Congress to give the NCAA exemption to enforce that.
Let me take a break right there because we'll turn a page and go to the Trump EO when we come back. Now that we've covered, if you're a university, you can pay whatever you want so long as you're under the salary cap of $20.1 million, is that it?
$20.5 million for the whole department this year.
Okay, so you distribute that money however you like. When it comes to name, image, and likeness, you got to run it through an accounting firm and have it audited to make sure that it's fair market value as it stands now. But that could be antitrust. What does the Trump EO have to say about that? We'll find out when we come back talking to our friend Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. If you have any questions or comments, and if you don't have any questions, you're not listening closely. 504-260-1870. It's the Oakmont Jeweler Talk and Text Line. Don't ever text and drive, but pass your questions along, and I will pass them along to Matt. When we come back, Tommy Tucker, WWL. And back to Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, talking about NIL, the House settlement. What that said, I guess we can do a quick recap. The university's got a $20.5 million salary cap. They can spend it however they want. Name, image, and likeness has to go through, how you say that accounting firm?
That would be Deloitte.
Deloitte.
They're calling it a clearinghouse.
A clearinghouse. So it's like an index almost where if it meets the fair market value, again, that's a very subjective thing, then it's allowed. Does that violate antitrust laws? I don't know. That maybe is what this all comes down to. Meanwhile, President Trump, a couple of weeks ago, issued an executive order about this. Tell me what that says as it relates to the House settlement and what I just said.
Yeah, so I've pulled this up here since we were talking. The order came out on July 24th, so it was a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And the White House EO directs the Department of Labor, the DOE, the DOJ to, quote, take appropriate measures to protect Olympic sports and non-revenue sports and to protect student athletes' rights and safeguard the long-term stability of college athletics from endless debilitating antitrust and other legal challenges. Now, the Trump administration cannot unilaterally grant the NCAA or the College Sports Commission, which is the fancy name for this clearinghouse, can't grant him an antitrust exemption all by himself. Congress needs to do that. The House is advancing legislation to do exactly that. It is very likely to pass. The Senate is less likely because in order to break a filibuster, you're going to need 7 Democrats to vote with it, potentially 8 if any Republicans decide to break off. And so the interesting question is whether the Trump administration kind of getting more involved in this makes it more or less likely that antitrust protection can get through the Senate. Because if you were a somewhat vulnerable purple state-ish Senate Democrat who might be persuaded to vote for this, are you now less likely to do it because now it's very clear that Trump wants it? I think that's unclear at the moment.
So, yeah, now you got politics, a lot of politics factoring into it. So not to mention with redistricting, who knows how that could play out. So
sure.
When it comes to female sports, women's and Olympic sports, I don't know about the Olympic part, but the female sports seemingly would not be something that a conservative administration, generally speaking on this, would be in favor of. Is that kind of, did that kind of surprise you or not?
Let me ask
one more question. How does that play into Title IX with any of this?
Sure. My terrible radio answer is that I think the policy and political questions here are really quite complicated. There have been many conservative lawmakers and politicians over the last 18 months that have gone out of their way to take up the vanguard of protecting women's sports. And generally, that's only in the context of trans athletes and sport participation. But if you want to be seen as credible on that issue long term, especially with the Olympics coming to the United States in the near future, there's going to be some lawmakers that are going to say, like, no, we want to continue to promote this Olympic pipeline. We want there to be college swimming and college tennis and college golf programs. And that ties into everything that we're talking about here, Because as big universities, or actually as universities generally, are now sharing revenue directly with athletes and having to spend money to build an infrastructure to pay athletes, they also still, they're going to need money to still pay for all of these other Olympic sports programs. And with, you know, and with higher education facing significant budget cuts on a couple of other levels, it's not a surprise that many small programs throughout Division I over the last several months have already decided to drop programs. And so this is something that the White House, you know, based on the EO, has said that they're concerned about and wants to get ahead of. It's unclear to what extent the administration can force schools to continue to sponsor programs or push them to maybe add other ones. But we could say that about a lot of other things, and the White House has been able to extract concessions from elite colleges about other stuff. So that could very well be part of the push and pull over the next 6 months.
So bottom line, President Trump is trying to, you would fill in the blank with?
I would say bottom line is President Trump wants to be seen as the sports president. Okay. And he wants to be seen as the force that is going to get credit for saving college sports. And he wants to make sure that schools are not doing unpopular things like dropping women's tennis programs to pay for less tackles, and wants to use the executive office to pressure schools not to do that. How effective it is, what impact that will have on lawmakers or governors, still to be seen.
So
could work.
Rein in the lucrative name, image, and likeness deals known as NIL. I don't know what that means. I mean, the executive order is filled with a lot of nice words, but I don't understand quite what he's looking for. Am I missing something or not?
No, I don't think you're necessarily missing something. What I can tell you is that there is a pervasive thought among conservatives in the U.S. Senate and in the House that NIL has gone too far. Maybe many of your listeners might agree with that, right? There's too much money flying around. Athletes are transferring too often. That power has moved away from coaches and more towards agents or to players, and that is not right. And a world where, whether that's the NCAA, whether that's Deloitte, whether that's states, are able to impose more order and restrictions and something more closely resembling a collective bargaining agreement, that is an idea that has a lot of currency with lawmakers. Like, remember, one of the people that Trump listens to the most about this stuff is Tommy Tuberville, mm-hmm. who hates where college sports is mm-hmm. right now. And whether that lines up with the kind of free market ideal that may have been more popular among conservatives in like 1994, you know, that's a different conversation. But what I can tell you right now is that people that are close to the president and that the president listens to would like changes to this world. Whether you can do that via an EO or not, we don't really know.
So the Trump administration, through the Department of Education, it's no secret, is in the process of dismantling, as you said, the Title IX enforcement. But now they're saying to protect women's sports. So I'm thinking, well, maybe NIL is a way to protect women's sports if you could find people that are willing to pay for that. The other thing is, we'll pick it up when we come back, because I got to take a break here, Matt.
Yeah.
One thing I think that's getting lost in this, maybe perhaps especially when it comes to women's sports, perhaps not necessarily so, is a chance for people to receive college educations that otherwise would not, and how that affects the rest of their life, whether they're golfers, tennis, bowlers, whatever, that would otherwise not have had a college education. Not that college is for everybody, but you understand what I'm saying, right, in terms of opportunity?
I do. Let's talk about that after the break. I have a story coming out on this exact thing.
Outstanding. That, and we'll talk about the Olympic pipeline as well. Matt Brown, our guest, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. It is 9:35, time for traffic on WWL. All right, 9:41, 9:19 till 10. Quickly back to Matt Brown, publisher of the Extra Points newsletter, talking about the House settlement, about name, image, and likeness, about President Trump's executive order, about antitrust, Olympic pipelines, and more. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I think talking about the Olympic movement here is really important, because you alluded to this right before the break, and it's something that maybe not all of your listeners are aware of, but college sports is, I believe, right now the second largest college scholarship program in the country, just behind the GI Bill, and the gap isn't really isn't that large. It's how we not only train elite athletes in most Olympic sports, not just for the United States, but really for athletes all over the world. But it is a major pipeline for people who might not otherwise be able to go to college or be able to afford college. One of the challenges with that movement right now is as costs have increased throughout college sports due to revenue sharing, due to construction costs and labor for facility improvements are going up, the shortages for other athletic equipment, and also as higher education itself is in a really difficult position as enrollment has dropped, and certainly for many public schools here in Louisiana, as state funding has declined, as federal research grants have been cut all over the country, schools are in a pinch where they're hurting financially generally, and now they might need to come up with an extra $5, $10, $15, $20 million in their athletic department, which is why many smaller schools have decided, all right, time to cut women's tennis, time to cut baseball, time to cut softball. And bigger schools have decided, well, maybe we'll keep the sport, but we'll cut the scholarships. We'll cut the coach. We'll cut the operations coordinator. We'll dial things back. That's something that the Trump administration is worried about. They signal that that's something, a trend that they want to stop in the EO, although it doesn't explain exactly why. And this is a conversation that's happening all over Washington right now about if we can't use this current system where LSU gymnastics and softball and women's soccer are paid essentially by excess profits from football, if we can't do that anymore, how are we going to pay for it? And the dirty little secret is, I'll tell you, Tommy, like everyone else in the world that's a rich industrialized country,
yep,
their national government is the primary source for funding for training elite athletes. And that's not something that we've done in this country. And we don't necessarily have to do it that way. But the ahead of the Olympics now, this is the time to talk about how do we intend to do this for the future?
Well, and it goes to, Matt, nothing is free, right? Nothing is free. And who pays in those other countries, those industrialized nations, to field these Olympic teams and to train these Olympic athletes?
It's for everybody else, it's usually the federal government. Mm-hmm. And it may surprise people that sometimes it's the federal government through the military. In some Nordic countries, in Germany, in some countries in South America, it's their military that helps pay for elite sport academies. In some countries, it's through a minister of sport. You know, it would be like a cabinet-level position like we have in the United States. We've decided to do it mostly through universities, some of which are funded in some roundabout way by the taxpayer, some not, and through private philanthropy. And that system right now is facing financial pressure that it hasn't faced in 100 years.
And the reason I say nothing's free is you can't clamor now for this, that, the other thing, but then when the Olympics rolls around, and I think the next one is the Winter Olympics of 2026, right, coming up next?
Yeah.
If the U.S. finishes last in this or last in that, and I don't know, Trinidad Tobago has more gold medals or more medals than we do, nothing against Trinidad Tobago, but I don't think their GDP is close to ours, well, then you got to look back and see what's the reason for it. Let me address a couple of things here that have come in via text, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time going back because I like to stick with the newest developments with you, but somebody says that... The NIL, the end of amateur athletics, I thought once you're paid to play, you are professional. You've given us the background on this numerous times, but apparently whoever texted this in didn't hear, you know, like your story back to the 20s and the illusion, if you will, the delusion that college athletes were amateurs and not professionals. Maybe not being paid would be a better way to put it than professionals, because I don't know if they made a living at it, but go ahead.
Sure. I think this is a fair question because it's something a lot of people struggle with. And what I would say to this individual is throughout history, amateurism has been whatever we said that it was. In the 20s, 30s, 40s and early 50s, a big question, particularly here in the Southeast, would be, hey, if you gave somebody an athletic scholarship, if you paid for their school, if you paid for their training table to play sports, aren't you compensating them? Then are you no longer an amateur? And people in Big Ten country and Big East country and the Pac-12, RIP, would say exactly that. And then we had a national conversation about it, and the folks in the South won, and then we decided, okay, that you're still an amateur. And then that expanded to laundry money, and that expanded to cost of attendance, and that expanded to other cash awards. And now we're at potentially making money from sponsors or from other third parties, and now for the first time, money directly from the school. What I would say is more so than at any other time in college sports history, I think it is impossible to argue with a straight face that Garrett Nussmeier, the quarterback at LSU, is an amateur. Like, no, he's literally from the university going to be making more money than either of us this year, probably more money than either of us will ever make. And good for him, because he's awesome. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the country at a school that's going to have an athletic budget of north of $200 million. He should be paid quite a bit of money.
Tim tells me that Garrett Nussmeier, not Garrett Nussmeier, right?
Please.
I get him confused. Garrett Nussmeier and Brian Kelly have the same agent. So that might be interesting when it comes to evaluate. I don't know. Go ahead. I didn't mean.
Sure. This happens in pro sports all the time too. It helps to have somebody with extra familiarity on both sides of the negotiating table when you're sitting down there. All of this is to say is like, yeah, the amateur ideal, if it didn't die in 1904 when we first started cheating, it probably should be dead now, but legally speaking, these are not considered pro athletes the same way the folks in the NFL or NBA are.
Now, tell me what the Olympics say about professionalism, or have we done away with that completely, where that's not even – well, we've done away with it, I guess, because baseball players and everything else compete, right?
Yeah. We've had NBA players competing since, what, the 80s?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, if you win a gold medal, the U.S. government cuts you a check. I think is actually a good example of how the definition of amateurism has shifted. What made you an amateur in the Olympics? And
yeah. I didn't know this. If you win a gold medal, what happens?
Yeah, you get a check. It's not a very big check, but you get an award from the federal government. I want to say it's like five figures.
So the taxpayers award the gold. Well, if you want to say taxpayers, or they can print as much money as they want. Either way, it comes back to the taxpayers. Award gold medal athletes as it stands now, right?
That is my understanding. It's not an exorbitant amount of money. I don't know from what department it comes from, or whether it's from income tax or selling assets somewhere else, or part of some grants to sports federations or what. But yeah, you do get a little cash prize if you win a gold medal.
Well, it's it's all money. It's just one big bucket of money, no matter whatever feeds into it. Somebody texted in. I found this interesting. They said that.
Yeah.
NIL has shapeshifted from sponsorship and endorsements to a paycheck. It's trash. But is there really a difference between a paycheck and NIL?
Well, when you talk to some of the people that I've become professionally friendly with that were involved in the first NIL state laws in Florida and California and New Mexico, they'll tell you, we don't see a distinction between getting a check from McDonald's and Dr. Pepper or getting a check from Bubba Booster. Mm-hmm. We designed this to maximize economic liberty rather than just trying to than for just sponsorships. Certainly, the marketplace has changed because it turns out there's not that many college athletes who are super marketable to McDonald's, who's responsible to shareholders and has a fiduciary responsibility to make money in a way that booster collectives are not. What I would tell anybody who might be frustrated about this, and like when I write, I try to differentiate between booster-driven payments and brand-based NIL. But I actually deeply believe that commercial opportunities for athletes are a net positive. And one of the biggest reasons for that is that if you are an LSU athlete, whether you're playing women's soccer, football, basketball, rifle, whatever. I don't know if LSU has a rifle team, but like any sport, it's a major commitment. It's way more than 20 hours a week. And you can't have the same educational experience that maybe you or I did. You can't tell Brian Kelly, hey, coach, I love you, but I'm going to Italy for the semester. I'll see you in April. And through brand-based NIL opportunities, we are allowing athletes to have smaller internships and to be exposed to a broader array of professional contacts and opportunities that maybe you and I might have had. I think it's really important. Most LSU athletes, even four-star football players, are not going to be professional athletes 10 years after graduation. And it's, I think, part of the point of American higher ed is to help prepare folks for what they're going to be doing in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And if we do this right, NIL really can be a big part of that.
If we don't have a rival team at LSU with the hunters we have here, we should. When it comes to high school and age of majority, does that factor into this at all? Because, now high school athletes are being as heavily recruited from grammar schools. Yeah. And I just wonder, how far down does this filter? Is it about age of majority or enfranchisement? Can a parent make a deal for a kid? Is that slavery? I don't know. Talk to me.
No, these are really good questions. And the unfortunate answer is it matters. It depends so much by state. Mm-hmm. What ends up happening is that a teenager's high school athletic eligibility is governed by like their state high school athletic association. And based on whatever a state law says and whatever the high school athletic association says, you have a state NIL policy. Most states at this point will allow high school athletes to participate in brand endorsement deals. They have to follow whatever applicable child labor laws in the mm-hmm. state. If you're under 16, you have to have a parent or somebody else. But in most places, you're allowed to do this. Not everywhere. I believe Texas is one of the holdouts. There's a couple of other smaller states that say, like, if you sign one of these things before you turn 18, you lose your high school athletic eligibility. And there are players who may transfer out of state and go somewhere else as a high schooler to maximize their earning potential.
Is that much different than apprenticing your kid out as a printer in the Dickens age?
I think the money's a little bit better.
Money's better
than it was
right.
As a printer.
And maybe the work's more enjoyable. Thank you, Matt Brown. A pleasure as always, man. Publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. Give me the web address to subscribe.
Friends, you can find it at extrapointsmb.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Matt Brown EP.
Quick break. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.